Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, on a mission to create remodeling experiences worthy of 5-star online reviews. See the difference at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The Office of Violence Prevention has one of the toughest jobs in the city of St. Louis. That office was founded in 2022. Over its first couple years, our show talked about the office's work and what it means for a city that's often featured in lists of the country's most dangerous places. The causes of violence are complex. Today, 4 years after its founding, the city's Office of Violence Prevention is still working to address them, even as it faces new challenges. The office also has new leadership. Marvin Teer Jr. was most recently the chief trial attorney for the Circuit Attorney's Office. He spent the last 30 years in the criminal justice system, both as a prosecutor and a judge. And he's now the director of St. Louis's Office of Violence Prevention. Last week, he sat down with me in our studio. I began by asking him about his decision to lead the office.
I think for me, it's been a very natural transition. Over the years, I've tried a lot of very violent cases, obviously, 60, 70 homicides to jury trial, and handled hundreds over the years. And for me, it has a cumulative effect. I don't want to say it's sort of a PTSD, but there comes a point when you feel like, rather than cleaning up behind the elephant, that you can lead it and feed it in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was an opportunity to literally have an impact on the front end, not on the back end.
This opportunity, did it present itself to you or did you seek it out?
I didn't know that the office really even existed. In its inception, in our spaces, prosecutors and those in the court system, it wouldn't be something that would play a prominent role in our day-to-day activity. But someone mentioned it to me that there was this opening, and they said to me, "What do you think about that? Because you know everybody and everybody knows you. I think you ought to really look into it." Mm-hmm. And so that's how it kind of progressed to this point that folks in city government thought I would be a good pick for it.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about the cases that you've prosecuted, and having spent the last several years as a prosecutor for the city of St. Louis, was it at all difficult to leave that position?
I loved my office. The young attorneys that are in there, and some of us, more seasoned prosecutors, there's a camaraderie, a cadre kind of effect. You like training and teaching these young lawyers. I became a prosecutor, and I still remember my father's words a long time ago when I got offered this job under D. Joyce Hayes. Back in 92. And my father told me then, said, "Son, this is as much your city as it is anyone else's. And therefore, it's as much your responsibility as it is anyone else's." And for me, that's always been a driving force of a certain degree of responsibility to my community and to my neighborhood. And so when this opportunity presented itself, for me, it seemed like a very natural transition.
You talked about cleaning up after the elephant. Mm-hmm. We can sort of think about what that means. Prosecutors deal with violence, mm-hmm, after it has taken place. Do you have an approach to violence that is informed by that? How do you approach violence differently in this new role?
Violence has been characterized and I think appropriately diagnosed as a community health problem. For me, all of the training, all of the cases that I've seen, all of the young men and women or the folks that have been prosecuted, who've unfortunately done terrible things, it felt like I needed to be in front of that and do something that somehow just doesn't mitigate it, but can make those environments whole mm-hmm. and healthy. So that's kind of a basic philosophy that I have.
Mm-hmm. There are many groups and programs that are funded by the Office of Violence Prevention. And Marvin, you do not directly manage these programs. However, you are evaluating their applications and approving funding that could be thousands or even millions of dollars in sum. How do you assess whether a program is worth supporting?
You try to look, first of all, in what their format is. What is their mission? If there is historical information that's available, they've had a history. Some organizations like Boys and Girls Club, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, you know, some of those entities have been around for a long time. So you know how to measure their efficacy. But many of our providers are new to this playing field, 5 or 10 years or less within that space to provide their service. And you do the best you can in learning how well that they've delineated all of their programming, how well that they have addressed and staffed with the appropriate level of sophistication that would help them meet whatever their mission is. And hopefully over time, you can build a good foundation that lets you know that what they're doing is good, and if it's not working very well, how can we support you? And then connect you to others who've been doing it, because if you want to do something successful, find people who've done it very, very well before and just do what they do.
Mm. I'd like to get a better grasp on what kinds of violence your office is working to prevent. And to do so, I'd like to add another voice to this conversation. Jason Watson is the Senior Vice President of Engagement at Mission St. Louis. He's also the director of the nonprofit Show Me Peace. Jason, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
So Jason, tell us what brought you into this work to begin with.
What brought me into this work is personal impact. I'm born in St. Louis. I grew up in Walnut Park, which is currently a beautiful neighborhood, but has some issues with violence. I had a sister who was murdered. I've had a host of friends who have lost their lives around me. I was also one of the people that were responsible for some of the violence that we see in the city. So for me, my passion for the work comes from personal experience and recognizing that it takes us to have impact in those spaces.
Mm-hmm. What are the forms of violence, Jason, that you are primarily focused on addressing at Show Me Peace?
So we primarily focus directly on gun violence and gun violence victims.
Mm-hmm. Has that sort of come together over time? Has it always been gun violence from the beginning?
Great question. So Show Me Peace was started specifically to focus on gun violence. Our larger organization is Mission St. Louis. Through the Office of Violence Prevention and the Mayor's Office, we have 9 neighborhoods that we primarily focus on. So for us, it's really about what does it look like to intervene in those circumstances? Because remember, we're talking about the Office of Violence Prevention. Mm-hmm. So our first goal is what does it look like to prevent these things from happening? And then what can we do to keep them from being ongoing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What does that entail or involve in the day-to-day work that you do?
So my role is actually, I'm the director of Show Me Peace. So we have hired what we would call site supervisors and violence interrupters. And what that really looks like is we call them credible messengers. I like to say that anytime somebody feels disrespected, the only way you're going to calm them down is if you bring in somebody they respect. So we hire individuals who are already respected and have influence in that community. So when they step in to have those conversations, these are already their friends, their family members, their neighbors, and their community.
Mm-hmm. Do these folks come to you? Are you going out to tap them?
Great question. So we're doing a vetting process, right? So we go around, build relationships, try to identify who might be individuals that are a good fit. One of the things that I often say, and I think Tyr would echo this as well, is that this is really a program inside of a program. So what's important for the community to understand is that we know we're not hiring individuals who are already completely ready. They're individuals who have to be developed. They're also individuals who would be the problem if they weren't working for us. Mm-hmm. So before we ever even touch the community, we're already investing in individuals who would be the problem, mm-hmm. and we're stabilizing them.
Yeah. Marvin, what comes to mind as you hear Jason describe the approach that Show Me Peace takes?
It is absolutely, I think, the perfect approach. You have to have people. The only people that are going to know what happens in the streets are the people who come from the streets, are going to be the people and are going to have, as he said, that credible message that will be heard and received. I couldn't go talk to the homies in the street. I mean, they'd be all right. They'd talk to you. But would they respect you on the level to receive the information they need to take them beyond where they are in that angry, in that moment? That wouldn't come for me.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about the work of St. Louis's Office of Violence Prevention. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
Let's return to my recent conversation with Marvin Tyr Jr., the director of St. Louis's Office of Violence Prevention, and Jason Watson, director of the nonprofit Show Me Peace. Last week, I sat down with them to talk about how the city's government and local groups are working together to reduce violence. Before the break, we were talking about the ways that groups like Show Me Peace try to identify and interrupt a source of violence before it happens. Jason, can you provide an example of what a successful case of violence disruption looks like?
So we had a circumstance where we had a young man who had an issue with another young man. It was around money. A money disagreement. And it had got to the point where there were words exchanged. We were able to notice that some of these things were taking place through communication of friends that we had in those neighborhoods. So we knew that these two individuals were going back and forth around this particular circumstance. In this case, we were blessed because we had people on our team that knew both parties involved. So imagine us being able to deploy a team member to each side of that situation to begin to have conversations. And what we come to find out was really it started with a matter of disrespect. One person didn't even mind giving the other person his money back. He just felt like he was disrespected by that individual. So he felt like, since you disrespected me, I ain't giving you nothing back. Right. So we had to step in and bring an opportunity for conversation to happen for him to understand why the other person disrespected him, so to speak. Right. But the reason they were really willing to listen is because the individuals that were involved were friends, family members, people that they already knew. One thing that I often say is that when the communities we come from, violence is an expression of love. And what that means is that when you hurt somebody I love, it looks like love to hurt you back. So I need the community to understand that we're not just trying to get people not to shoot a gun. Essentially, when I tell you don't retaliate, I'm telling you not to respond with love. So ultimately, what we're doing is we're teaching people, what does it look like to love your people differently? Mm-hmm. Right. So when people wonder, why don't we see overnight results? Because these violence is a part of some of these people's value and moral makeup. Right. To them, it's good to do something to you because that's what love looks like. Mm-hmm. We're working with you to help you see that differently.
Marvin, what stands out to you about this example that Jason has provided, given all that you've seen, and then your charge also to do what you can to replicate that kind of success?
Jason's organization, along with one or two others that are out there just like his, is an important component to make the puzzle turn into a picture. But you have to be on the front line, and what's so important in what Jason does and his interrupters do is to be on the front line to give a safe space for those really, really difficult conversations to be had and people to look into themselves, because really, if you help someone see the world differently, you're giving them the opportunity to grow and learn more about themselves. And so his role is so essential just because he's able to create that safe space and then be a part of this puzzle to make it all look whole. Mm-hmm.
Since the creation of the Office of Violence Prevention in 2022, there's been the use of funds from the American Rescue Plan Act, and we're talking here about millions of dollars. But as we get further into 2026, the city's running out of time to use that money, and that's because those ARPA funds will expire by the end of the year. And we're already seeing some of that pressure playing out in the city of St. Louis government. So these funding changes and realities, what does that mean for the Office of Violence Prevention, Marvin?
We have a portfolio of about $30 million. 23 of that is going to sunset with ARPA right around that September mark of this year. We have probably 83 different contracts with 60, give or take, providers, 43 of which will go away. What that means for me is we still have a number of other programs. I believe Jason's program is under general revenue funds. Mm-hmm. We also have Prop S and Prop P, Proposition P, Proposition S incentives. We've got one out now for about $1.3 million that we're looking for a summer jobs program. So our office will continue, but it also tells me that there is going to be a huge void when these funds sunset, those programs and the people that go with it, and they're all very well-trained individuals. You're talking about therapists and counselors and wound specialists who are not going to be in that mix anymore. They're not going to be there by the bedside of a young man who's just been shot and is dealing with both the trauma of what happened as well as the pain and suffering that's going along with it. There's not going to be counselors to take young kids who've seen their father or mother shot and tried to help them and guide them through that. There's not going to be those domestic violence folks who can come and move a mother and a child out of the home immediately, so there's no response. To me, our mission will go on, but just in a very limited, or at least in a reduced manner.
Mm-hmm. You've just mentioned that for Show Me Peace, that they are funded through general funds, but if there is this change in funding from the Office of Violence Prevention, Jason, how would the work that Show Me Peace is doing connected to the work of other organizations affected?
Absolutely. One of the beautiful things that the Office of Violence Prevention has been able to do is create this ecosystem. right, where organizations who have otherwise been in silos were brought to the table together. When we talk about Diamond Divas, when we talk about FCC, places like that that are doing amazing work, we've been able to collaborate within that ecosystem to work with participants together. So it's definitely a concern for us because we recognize that we are not the only ones needed in this ecosystem. This work cannot be done with Show Me Peace alone. We need all of those other counterparts working in conjunction with the work that we do on the ground so that we can see these people all the way through to stability.
I also want to touch upon the relationship between crime and violence. Homicides are obviously acts of violence. And when we look at data, homicides in St. Louis continued on a downward trend from 151 incidences in 2024 to 139 in 2025. How well does that, you know, those numbers, Jason, match with what you are hearing and seeing in the community? Is violence, is it on the decline, or is there something beyond violent crimes to be thinking about?
That is a great question. One of the things that we're challenged with thinking through is, first, what does it look like to stabilize what's happening? Right. So when you look around 2022, 2023, obviously right after COVID as well, you saw violence immediately spike up. So you see that violence was on its way up. Right. Then we have things like the Office of Violence Prevention, Show Me Peace, other ecosystem pieces stepping in where you don't see drastic numbers drop. But what happens is you start to see those numbers stabilize. So what you find out about data is first you stabilize your baseline, then you start to bring your baseline down. Right. And I think that's where we are. What we've saw over the last couple of years is them starting to stabilize. What we believe is the continual efforts of the OVP, what we'll start to see is more drastic drops in that particular data. But one thing that I want to note is that this has been happening with Marvin stepping into the plate and being able to push more forward what it looks like for this ecosystem. I think the more we see this togetherness, the more we'll see the impact of those numbers. That's the beauty of the OVP, is that the more you strengthen the ecosystem, the more you see impact in the data.
We're talking today about St. Louis City's Office of Violence Prevention and how that office is operating under new leadership. I'm here with the office's director, Marvin Teer Jr., and Jason Watson, who's the director of the nonprofit Show Me Peace. You were named to this position, Marvin, just a few months ago, mm-hmm. in November. What are the hopes that you have for the future, not just of how you are working in this office, but for the office as a whole?
Obviously, I'd like to see it not just survive, but thrive and grow. There are probably 100 or so equivalent offices like ours across the country, both at a local level and a state level. I'd love for the state to be involved. And we collaborate with our partners in Kansas City, but we also have a national presence where we collaborate and use as a training base all of the other national organizations across the country. And again, trying to learn how they do what they do, because many of these places, up in Baltimore. They've been doing it forever. Los Angeles has been doing it forever. And they have very thriving offices. You know, I only have probably 15 total of employees in my office. I could use 20 more because the problems are that great. I'd love to be able to touch, as Jason said, we only have about 10 or 11 target neighborhoods from across the city. Many of them are up north, Dutchtown on the south, Doris Webby, the Peabody's in the heart of the city. But there are so many other pockets across the city that need the same kind of collaborative effort. So for me, I'd love to see the office grow.
Mm-hmm. Jason, are there some programs and resources that you would like our listeners to know about if they're in danger or trying to help, especially around, you know, what is termed high-risk individuals?
Absolutely. we started to think about the impact of the violence that individuals experience in these communities. North St. Louis alone has about 150,000 residents, with one mental health facility to service all 150,000 of those residents, which is also one of the most violent areas as well. So what we're excited about Peace on Wheels, which we'll be launching sometime in April in conjunction with our violence intervention efforts. And this will allow us, we've taken an RV, wrapped it, turned it inside into a home type of vibe. And we will be offering free counseling and mental health services to individuals in those communities in that neighborhood. So that means you won't have to leave your neighborhood to access these services. And the reason I think it's important for people to be aware of this and know that this is happening is because when we start to talk about violence, what we're really talking about is mentality. We're not just talking about action. And I think often when we're looking at data, we're looking at immediate number changes, but we understand that mentality takes time. So we're bringing these mental health services to bear so that individuals who are dealing with this compound trauma, we can start to address it at the root cause.
Mm-hmm. There has been some movement, some improvement. What do you think it'll take, Jason, for the city to see, you know, and to recognize that a real shift in violence, that it has happened and that it can happen?
Great question. Three things. Number one, I think what we need is a tight ecosystem where we don't fight against each other. We don't argue over philosophy. We don't argue over approach. We agree on mission. I think that needs to happen, number one. Number two, we need a community that understands the value of the Office of Violence Prevention and what that really means, right? So being able to clearly communicate and help community understand where the Office of Violence Prevention steps into place. And then thirdly, I think more importantly than anything, we need patience. I think we've had over countless decades of violent history in St. Louis. To assume that Show Me Peace or any other program can correct that issue overnight is unfair to us. So I just would ask the community to be patient, to pay attention to the work, and recognize that if data is dropping drastically quickly, something ain't right about that data. If we want to see sustainable impact, it's going to be impact that happens day by day over time. Mm-hmm.
Marvin, I don't know whether you subscribe to divine timing, but everything that Jason has talked about, you know, the things that have been achieved over the last few years, do you think that we are at a point at which there has been a recognition of a shift, and that is why you were encouraged to take up this position?
Well, I wouldn't think that, and I'm not going to say that. I'm such an integral part of changing the dynamic of our city. But I love St. Louis. It has been and will always be my home. I think the universe gives you what you need, not what you want. And somehow or another, something has led me in my life journey to this place. I wouldn't call it divine intervention, but it couldn't come at a better time. I'm old enough. I'm 63. I'm old enough now. I've seen enough from the lessons I learned from my parents and growing up in North St. Louis when North St. Louis was still very segregated, to come to a point that I think I have both the right experience, exposure, and expertise to add something to this equation and maybe put a little bit of what I've done and make the picture look a little bit better and a little more complete. I feel very blessed to be in this position.
That was Marvin Teer Jr., the director of St. Louis's Office of Violence Prevention, and Jason Watson, director of the nonprofit Show Me Peace and the senior vice president of engagement at Mission St. Louis.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.